Welcome to the Playmaker Podcast, a podcast for people who want to sell differently. Playmakers wage war against traditional sales and win. Remember, success is just one play away. All right, let's get going. Today we're talking about unraveling the sales technology stack. God, you can't live without a technology stack, right? It's just one of those things you've got to have. Well, when it comes to sales tech stacks, certainly a couple things you want to get in place before you buy systems. Now, again, I got to be careful. I work for a technology company, so, I mean, systems are good. But I have had a couple sales reps slap my hand and say, hey, why are you saying that? You know, why don't you push them toward systems? Well, truthfully, other systems will fail if you don't get a couple things in place. One of those is your process. I mean, if you're going to go for some sort of system, you better be able to look someone like me in the eye and say, the reason we're getting this system is because of this, this problem, deficiency. I think the word I was looking for is deficiency in our process. And I love seeing processes mapped out and saying, this is where we think this system can potentially play. So be thinking about mapping your sales process. If you want me to review your sales process map, I love to do that. Send it over to G as in Gabriel, G Larson at insidesales.com. So that's number one. Number two, you know, when you think about your tech stack, you cannot assume that you can get one technology for everybody. I'm a big believer in recognizing your personas. What personas or what functional specialties do you have within your sales team? So if you've got a sales development team, you've got a inside sales team, and you got a field sales team, you got a customer success team. These different functional areas warrant different tools. And if you know your personas, you know how best to utilize or the most about those personas, the more likely you are to be able to find technology that works for those personas. So not always can your sales development team use your field reps technology. Not only can your sales development use the customer success. I mean, you need to start thinking about functional areas. And then with those functional areas, you can say, okay, for my customer success team, what are some of the key pieces I need in order to fulfill their needs? The reason I bring this up, because a lot of times people think, oh, I'll just get this technology and I'll be able to use it for everybody. Now, there are some tools that may fit that, like a Dropbox, a great productivity tool all functional areas can use, but there's a lot of tools that cannot be utilized across all personas. And so I think it's very important to understand your persona and then usually two key concepts around your persona. Number one, maybe it's one key concept, but you need to know this concept of transactional versus relational. If you are a transactional inside sales team, meaning you've got deal sizes under 50,000 and you're dealing with just a couple decision makers, it's more of a velocity play. Versus a relational model where you're going, you know, after the bigger fish, 50,000 plus, 6 month sales cycle, a lot of decision makers. Those are going to be different types of tools that you want to be considering for each of those two groups. So again, functional areas, sales development, inside sales, field sales, customer success. Then those, the type of functional area, are you inbound, outbound? Are you transactional versus relational? Very important aspects of personas that you should be considering. So that's my rant for the moment. Now I want to flip on for you. Great session. I helped organize this session. Became a big fan of Lauren Chacon. It's currently Constant Contact. I had a couple interactions with her. Big fan. I think she's got her head on straight. Does a lot of good over there at Constant Contact. She came out and did a session on unraveling the sales technology stack. We kind of wrote the following to explain what the conversation was going to be about. So we said, well, I said, companies have made significant investments to date in tools and technologies to enable sales. Usually the core of this investment is CRM system deployed with high expectations of a streamlined selling and new insights. Unfortunately, CRM systems are rarely fully utilize and often fall short of these expectations. What is needed beyond the CRM to help sales organizations unleash additional sales growth? God, did I write that? It's not bad. It's not bad at all. So we had Lauren Jacone join. Scott Carey was the moderator. Computer World from the coming out from the UK. Darren Fry, PGI, great guy. And then Jeff Scowls, one of our local boys, runs corporate sales over at Domo. Super successful company, super successful guy. So they break down some of their thoughts on unraveling the sales technology stack. And so I'm going to go ahead and play that for you now.
Yeah, so here I'm joined by Jeff Scowson. He's a VP of corporate sales at Domo. We've got Lauren Chacon from, she's the CSO at Constant Contact. And we've got Daron Fry, SVP of sales at PGI. We're going to talk about unraveling the sales technology stack. First question I'm going to put to the panel is, how should companies be thinking about the purchasing of enablement technology? And also, how do you do that if you don't have a fundamental understanding of your process? And I think, Lauren, you wanted to talk about this first. So.
Sure. So right when I started at Constant Contact, we had made a big investment in playbook technology. And what became readily apparent to me, and there's some folks in the room who know exactly what I'm talking about because they helped me unravel it later, we didn't have a sales process. There was not a clearly defined, repeatable sales process. So we put together this playbook and spent all this money on technology, and frankly, we poured it all down the drain because we needed to rip the whole thing apart and start all over again. And that's a classic example. If you don't have process and you don't know what problem you're solving, just buying technology will absolutely not get you there.
Yeah, and just to add to that, process, if you don't have process, making your number is almost impossible. You're not going to be able to execute on technology, buy technology, vet technology. So having a sales process in place is not only going to benefit your technology stack, it's going to benefit your sales organization because they're going to be more structured and more organized what they do day to day.
I have a unique perspective. I started at Domo 6 years ago, which was before it was the beginning of the company. And so we had no process and we had no technology. And so you're right. We had to grab the process piece and make sure that we at least understood generally where we were heading. There's CRM, there's marketing automation, there's different things you know you're going to need, and so you start there. I had my VP of marketing send me our marketing tech stack because I've been away from it for a little bit. So she sent me a PowerPoint page. There's probably 35 different technologies on there now across our whole process, which is crazy, but we started very general and got the basics down, the building blocks down, and then we added to that as we've refined over the years.
Would you have any advice for sort of organizations that are starting maybe from scratch from the process and the technology side in terms of trying to make sure that you get that right, you know, from day one from someone that's been there and done it?
Yeah, so here again, figure out what your go-to-market strategy is. You know, how are you going to be selling? We have kind of a dual sales methodology in our company where we do our ADM or SDR organization gets the leads, they set them up for the account execs. And so I need specific technology that works for that transition versus some other businesses. I mean, we're traditional B2B SaaS type selling. And so that's, you got to really understand your go-to-market strategy so that you can put the right pieces of technology in there to automate and just make it easier for the folks to sell.
I think you also got to make sure you've got the right functional leaders and even line people as part of that decision, as part of that process, because, you know, a sales process, as you build it, it impacts other organizations, so you got to make sure IT can implement it and execute on it. So I think you got to have the right functional department people, and it's not just the leaders, it's also the people in the trenches, because the leaders often miss out on some of the important details.
Well, yeah. And I was having this conversation this morning. If you don't get that alignment the first time something goes south, rather than being aligned on resolving it, you instantly get the finger pointing, like, you wanted this thing, this expensive thing, so make sure that you get that alignment up front, so, you know, you're all rowing in the same direction to make it successful.
Sure. And we wanted to talk about what role marketing plays in the sort of optimization of that sales technology stack. And Jeff, you were saying marketing have quite an active role at Domo in that process.
They did. We got away from it for a little bit, and sales and marketing are always have this debate going, hey, we're giving you the best leads, why can't you close them? And sales is saying, you're not giving me enough good leads. And so there's always this debate, and you really can't be successful, truly successful, unless you get on the same page. The conversations we've had with our marketing team is, hey, you're supplying a lot of these leads to us, and we need to know when we call them who we're talking to and what we say to them. So what campaign generated the lead? What? Give me all the information that I can get about this person before I pick up the phone. I can't have a sales development rep take 30 minutes, as Dave was mentioning earlier, to research this company and to get the volume of calls out that we need in a day. So when they log into our CRM, they need to be able to have that information readily available. And marketing and sales have to coordinate, you know, what was the attribution of this lead? Was it initial touch, second touch? Was it golden touch? You know, we've had these debates over and over, but really understanding who that person is you're talking to so you can have a great conversation and have the biggest, highest probability of converting that lead.
Yeah. And for us, I wish our marketing organization was a lot more inquisitive about technology. They're really big on the what, and they're really low on the how. And so, you know, right now, you know, I'm driving the technology conversation about, for example, solving our email. You know, so our marketing department, and that sounds kind of funny coming from an email marketing firm, I get that. But so, you know, we've got our sales team sends out, you know, a tremendous amount of correspondence after they, you know, have a sales call. And I'm trying to solve what I call the bro factor, which is, you know, I've got 23-year-olds who literally will think that they're smarter about writing an email than our marketing department, and they will start it with, hey, bro. And then they will like redo the email every time based on that unique special conversation. So our marketing department is going to send me a whole bunch of new emails to send. Like, here's emails that don't start with bro. Versus like, let's figure out why the reps are feeling they need to write their own emails. Let's figure out the system that they're using. Let's figure out how we track it. And let's come up with a technology solution to solve this problem as opposed to just rewriting all our emails. So I really wish they were more inquisitive. I wish they were going to more of these conferences and coming back with a great idea. And like, I didn't know this was possible, but look at this thing that is possible, and this can solve a problem I didn't even know we had.
So, over at PGI, we actually had marketing at one point rolling up to our president and sales rolled up to our president, and we were so disjointed. There was no unity. There was no partnering. Marketing would go out and do what they wanted to do, and sales would do what they wanted to do, and when something didn't work, it was a lot of that going back and forth. I'll be honest with you. We moved them together up under one leader, and it's amazing of how more productive we became, and they became partners with our business. And every time I have a leadership meeting, marketing is present with my team, with my leadership team. Every time we go out and research new technologies, it's sales and marketing going out and doing it together, along with some other organizations as well. But the relationship with marketing is so critical to the business that if you don't have that, it's very tough to be successful. And if you do have that, you'll see a lot of benefits to your go-forward sales strategy.
Cool. And we've been talking a lot about millennials today and about the way they work and the way they operate within your organizations. I know that at least two of you are pretty much all millennial sales workforces now, and your own, I think you've got a little bit more experience over there at PGI, but still it's the same issue, and you know, all those new hires coming in tend to be from that millennial pool. So I think the big question tends to be, how do you balance out giving them that technology that makes them autonomous and working for themselves, but also don't let that productivity slip? And you sort of touched on it earlier, Jeff, with that, you know, that half hour researching every lead process and maybe trying to rein them in a little bit.
Yeah, if you don't know if you have millennials working for you, if they come and ask for a raise or your job within the first 3 months, if they ask for that, you know you've got millennials working for you. So that's happened a few times.
It's a giveaway.
Yeah. So this question is around millennials and technology. Is that
Yeah.
So Domo's kind of interesting because we actually empower our reps with data. I mean, that's what we do. We bring data together. We make it very visible up on leaderboards and all throughout the office. We use the inside sales power power board. So right in between two cubes, they have their favorite pitcher, and they can choose the pitcher. And then they see who's making the most calls and everything. And that's actually really boosted our productivity inside the office. We try and hire, you know, aggressive athletes, as was mentioned earlier in an earlier session, because they just are competitive and they want to win. And so the lunchroom discussion is around who's winning for the day and who's going to end the day winning. So I think the technology component for millennials has actually been a real benefit to us. The problem with it is there's so many distractions. I'll walk through the office floor sometimes and people are doing all their social stuff. It's just bombarding them. I've got five kids and they all are bombarded by social. They can't hardly carry on a conversation sometimes without having something come up. So I think that's a challenge we all face in this day and age, where it's hard to get through a day without them, you know, wanting to chase something else or be distracted by something else. That's something we got to continue to work on.
I think it's also important to bring the millennials in as you're building your strategy and you're introducing new technologies, getting their feedback, because the way they operate is different. I mean, it's not the way that we grew up, or I grew up at least, in the sales organization. So bringing them in on the front end and getting their input as you're building your technology stack, it's super important, because they feel like they've had a say in the game there. And as they do that, as they learn that, they're going to buy in more. And if they're buying in, you're going to see other millennials buying in as well, because their peers are buying into it.
Right. For us, I mean, the why, to that exact point, the why is really important, and explaining them up front why we're doing something.
Yep.
And even to your point, and going back to the guy who wants your job, like, if you're like, all right, our most experienced reps, we're going to bring you in on this conversation. Let's talk about the problems that you want to solve. Let's, you know, get a little of your lunchtime reviewing some of these things. And then when you roll them out, you've got complete buy-in. So, like, we've done that with our lead scoring. Like, the first pass at our lead scoring we did, you know, my classic best rep sitting with him, rep of the year last year, he's like, oh, yeah, and this thing, they want me to call this. I'm not going to call that. I'm going to call this. And I'm like, well, why are you going to call that? Because, well, I'm the rep of the year. I know that this is a good lead. It's like he feels it in his bones. We've redone our lead score. It's sort of an iterative process at Constant Contact. And we've brought the reps in on the front end, showing them the data as to why the score works and why it will make them more successful and why they will get ahead if they follow this particular approach that we're taking.
Yeah.
I have just something to add to this. We kind of went full circle. So we had... We had the inside sales dialer totally queued up. It was going awesome. This was 3 or 4 years ago. And we had a change in leadership in the marketing department, and there was a shift to do account-based marketing and a focus to do that. Well, the problem is we decided to all jump on board, and yet I had this commercial business that didn't work well with that, right? The deals were too small, too transactional. It worked really well for the enterprise deals. So we tried to call a shot across the organization, which... was not the right call. So we started letting our reps decide who they want to call. And our productivity just dropped. I mean, we were suffering from getting leads. And so we changed. About 6 or 7 months ago, we changed, and we said, okay, for this team, we're going to do this. We're going to use Neuralytics, and we're going to get this dialer, you know, queued up, and we're just going to tell them, hey, your ultimate goal is to make money, right? This is going to tell you who to call, when to call, without you having to think about it. And our productivity shot up. We had our best quarter ever in Q4. And it was all as a result of letting technology do its job, not taking away, you can have your own personality and manage the call how you want, but in terms of who to call and when to call, that stuff's run by data. And so it was a balancing act between the two. But it really led to a lot more productivity, and they've seen that now. Now it's easy. I just point to that. This is when we did it this way. This is when we did it this way. Yeah. This way worked, and they're all on board because they're making money.
Yeah, I think what you're all saying is like it's that balancing act between the prescribing the technology and giving them the choices. And it's interesting that you say like they're actually engaged in the technology decision-making process now. 10 years ago, would you have seen them even knowing the name of the vendors?
No,
no,
not at all.
No, and like, where do they sort of bring that that input to you guys? Are they like, yeah, I like Dropbox, I want to stick with Dropbox, you know, for my file, like, or with email? Are they saying, you know, I prefer using Gmail? And how do you sort of balance them basically saying what they want to use and what you want to prescribe, especially at PGI where you've got to deal with bringing it all into the integrated stack?
They're so technology-driven more so than obviously we were 10, 15, 20 years ago. So they're so familiar with technology. In many cases, they're way beyond where we are with technology. So they like cool new toys and new technologies out there. If you execute them and you build them and you drive them in the right direction towards your business strategy, then those guys jump all over because they see it as kind of the cool new thing that's out there that can help them get to making money, as you said earlier.
Yeah, and again, it's the explaining why, not just telling them that this is what they're going to use.
Yeah, and for us, sometimes it's when we go out and observe how our team is spending their time and then look at the data and actually document it, walking around, it's like, well, I can see we hit all this downtime. Like, show me what's going on in your day so I can see, like, how, you're losing X amount of time in between each call. And then actually sitting with them, getting their buy-in through questioning and really being interested and curious about how their day is going and what can make them more successful. And then we also, we have senior reps that have a senior rep status. It's, a combination of tenure and performance. And we use that panel, so to speak, at lunchtime to say, here's a problem we're looking at, and here are different vendors that we can use to solve it. What do you guys think? And even just that act of whether or not we necessarily take that advice and make it actionable, but just that act of hearing people is so hugely important with this group, that being heard. We don't necessarily have to take their specific advice, but
being heard, you're right.
Being heard, knowing that they could weigh in is enormous.
And what about when bringing in that shiny new tool, that new piece of technology? What about when that doesn't work? How do you sort of manage against that happening, and how do you sort of limit the damage if the millennials just don't want to use it, they don't like it?
Well, first you got to own it. If you have something that's not, we have a gamification system we just ripped out because it just wasn't working. It became background noise. Nobody was paying attention to it. It wasn't nearly dynamic enough. It was top down. Here are the things that, Lauren Chacon thinks that you should be excited about. I mean, certainly there's the most ads you get in a day. They're all excited about that. But other rankings and other KPIs. And, we're looking at new gamification programs where reps can challenge each other and do, take some of the ownership into their own hands. But we owned it. We're like, look, we did this. It didn't work. We spent money on it. It's turned into wallpaper. Like, it's like pretending like I can't hear it, we've got to own this stuff because they'll call BS on you if you don't.
Yeah.
There's so many technologies out there now. I get 10 emails a day, new technologies I've never even heard of before. And so we had a great product on a technology we brought in, but we didn't implement it the right way. We didn't have the right people involved. We didn't structure it the right way. So we brought the new shiny toy in, and if it doesn't work quickly, it gets set aside, or they all try and do it their own way. And so I think to bring new technologies in, you really have to have a plan in place, and you have to know how you're going to roll it out. We've actually taken segments or groups and not rolled it out to the entire team initially, just to test it out and see how we want to roll it out to the entire team. It's like we do with code and development, put it in a sandbox and see how it works and get some buy-in. Yeah. And then roll it out to the entire organization. Much more successful that way, I've found.
Yeah, you'd think with them being so much more engaged with technology, the change management would be simpler than it was, but it seems like it's still a huge part of any time you buy a new technology.
And then if their peers are saying, hey, this is awesome, you got to check this out, they sell it for you. You don't have to really convince anybody.
Cool. And from a very high level, what's the biggest challenge you guys face in terms of managing that technology stack?
It's probably, there's so much of it out there, and it's narrowing it down and understanding what technologies are going to help us accomplish the business strategies that we have set forth for the current year and future years. And, as Jeff said, you get so many emails and you can go out and buy so many technologies that you can just get bombarded with them. And that's our situation today, is that we've got so many internal and we're trying to vet through them. And the ones that don't work or are not bringing any value, pushing them aside, moving along. And the ones that do work, how do we get the most out of them? And then what's new that's out there? All right, how do we bring in the newer technologies? But right now it's very crowded market.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just so much. There is so much out there that one can buy right now. For us, you know, we did a lot of, you know, several years ago, we did a lot of this work sort of, I guess the term I used was brute forced. Like, we didn't have a local presence dialer. We built one ourselves to work with our old Avaya system. We didn't go buy a lead score. We hired a big analytics team and we created our own lead score. So part of our organization is like, oh, you know, we have all that. But I've found over the last year, I've been a lot more aggressive about inviting really cool companies in just to talk to us and to do an evaluation of like what our stack looks like. In fact, you know, Inside Sales has come in and they pointed out some things. I was like, damn, like, oh, we can do that? Like, yeah, you can do that. Things, you know, we didn't know. So there is so much out there, but keeping an open mind, because there's problems you can be solving that you don't even know are solvable, or a problem you didn't even know you had. But if you have an open mind to what new technologies are out there, you can learn some really cool things.
Yeah, we buy it because it gives us competitive advantage. And so it just needs to be done in the right way. And honestly, I think if it's done in the right way, we're not going to get too much pushback from our reps, from our sales teams, because it really can make them more productive, and they just need to see the bigger picture of where we're trying to take them, and I think we're good.
That's a good point, Jeff, because you can buy technology, and if you've got poor execution on that technology, poor communication plan, then that's an opportunity for failure there as well. So having the right project plan, understanding what your goals are and what you want to accomplish, I think is also important.
Great. And then continuing to communicate it. Like,
yes.
Look, we did this thing.
Yes.
Look at these results we're getting. Isn't this great? Because yep. Then you continue to get the buy-in with the millennials, with the CEO, with your marketing department.
Yep.
And, you know, the next time you want to make your big bet, you've got that credibility built up.
And are they really reactive to those actual metrics? You know, do these guys like to benchmark themselves using those metrics, and is that a big part of what you buy in?
I can't afford to basically buy something that isn't going to have a metric that I can track.
Yeah.
If I can't attribute, so like we look at the number of leads we get every month, and if I know exactly what my conversion is on those month one leads, if I can't tie technology, for using that as an example, if I can't tie technology back to a multi-point increase in conversion, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Or if I can't tie it back to X amount of increase in productivity, that's a problem. So it's got to have a measurable metric. It can't just feel good and look fancy and fun.
And you got to be able to see that ROI.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier, the technology allows us to measure things. If we didn't have that, we couldn't measure. And as we've learned, you have to measure. You have to use data to run your business and to improve. And so that's why it's so important.
Nice. Well, thanks very much, guys.